Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. For a year, a couple years actually, the presidential campaign featured candidates standing on stages, speaking before crowds at rallies and conventions. One of those conventions actually featured a balloon drop. I'm still a little bitter about the lack of the balloon drop at the other one. They meet with small groups. They meet with important people. They sometimes have their picture taken with those groups. That's how campaigning goes. The process of governing takes place in much tighter quarters, like the back rooms at the Capitol or the sub-basement of the White House. So as the fiscal cliff, or as I call it, the fiduciary escarpment, looms, the president has at times tried to break out of the confining box. Campaign-style events, rallies, meetings, some publicized, some not, is sort of turning politics into a new kind of campaign trail. Joining me now to discuss this is the optimal candidate, Josh King, who is the man behind PolyOptics, which is a fantastic podcast, also heard on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Hello, Josh.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm well. So, can the voice of the people be culled in this way for an event or for a bill or for an issue and not for an election?
Well, it's very difficult, as you and I have been discussing. In an election, there's an obvious foil, an enemy, who can and with obvious spoils, 270 electoral votes, and you have unlimited resources to go do it, plus the government support of Air Force One and the bubble that a president travels in. The election ends, Mitt Romney goes back to La Jolla or Lake Winnipesaukee, and suddenly you are back into dealing both with your left flank, Congress that doesn't want to touch liberals in Congress that don't want to touch entitlements, and a right flank, Speaker Boehner and those to the far right who don't want to raise taxes. And you don't have an excuse, Mike, to power up Air Force One, fly to Colorado, fly to Florida, fly to Ohio, speak to 10,000 people that is a visual expression of the people's will, and come back and have that reflected on the evening news or the next day's newspaper. So instead, you have to be conscious that you have to really ramp down the optics on this. You can maybe take Marine One up to a manufacturer in Pennsylvania to speak before their employees. You can summon six bipartisan governors to the West Wing and have their images put on the evening news that night, and they walk out to the stakeout and they say something must be done. And hopefully you've put together enough visual cues and worked the reporters and the producers enough and the anchors so that Brian Williams might begin his newscast to say showdown with the Republicans on the defensive. But then you have Mitch McConnell and John Boehner having their own stage up on Capitol Hill.
Right. And you can go to an event in Pennsylvania, and that's exactly what President Obama did. It was a toy factory. In fact, here's some of that.
It's not acceptable to me, and I don't think it's acceptable to you, for just a handful of Republicans in Congress to hold middle-class tax cuts hostage simply because they don't want tax rates on upper-income folks to go up. All right? That doesn't make sense.
And he will be traveling to Philadelphia, a suburb of Philadelphia, to deliver a message on Friday. But when you appear at a political rally, there's always, and sometimes this part isn't even covered on the news, but the real reason you're there is the ask. You have to have the phrase, that's why I'm asking you for your vote. That's the tangible reason everyone's there. It becomes a little more squishy. What's he really asking people for in a setting like this?
Well, you're thinking strategically about perhaps the member of Congress that represents the district that you're traveling to, whether it's the suburbs of Philadelphia or central Pennsylvania, and the local coverage that will come in the local newspaper and the local Philadelphia area affiliates or Pittsburgh area affiliates or Harrisburg area affiliates. You'd like pressure to be applied to the senators and congressmen representing the regions to say that the people's will, whether it's expressed through polls or the applause line that you just heard on that audio clip from the factory, suggests that people ought to come to the table and deal. But the only thing you're asking for at this point, you can ask for, is pressure placed on on recalcitrant politicians, and that's what is happening from an external standpoint, too, with Alan Simpson, Erskine Bowles, and Fix the Debt, the notion of 50 or so CEOs flying into Washington, getting a meeting at the White House, and also trooping up to Capitol Hill. The only thing you're trying to do at this point is work toward that December 31st deadline for the fiscal cliff, and perhaps beyond, and put your opponents in an untenable position.
So let's say the president is as successful as he can be, given everything you've laid out. How much could he move the needle? How popular can his side of the argument become? And then let's extrapolate it to, isn't the audience really not whatever a national poll says, but what the polls in specific districts of specific Republicans who might be willing to vote with John Boehner or a more pragmatic side of their party? I mean, we're really talking about a very limited audience here, aren't we?
That's right. I mean, you're trying to, in some ways, even though Obama and Boehner are physically and visually keeping their distance from each other, they're not being seen as they were a year ago in the debt ceiling negotiations, trying to roll up their sleeves or play golf or meet in the cabinet room. They are trying to, Obama is probably trying to soften up the more stalwart members of the Republican body to allow Boehner to bring them along on a deal that may happen by the end of the year or shortly thereafter. But you're absolutely right, Mike. It is it's basically a chess match for a couple of members on each side, which might be the breaking point that would allow others to follow suit.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, speaking with Josh King, who is behind the Polyoptics website, podcast, and satellite radio show. He's also a veteran of the Clinton administration. And so what I would imagine, and you'd know more than me, is that in the White House, they are saying, look, we know of a lot of motivated citizens. And during the campaign, we knew what to do with them. I mean, they were this great asset, not just that we could convince the majority of the people to vote for us, but that we had some super dedicated people who could go out on their block and who could either raise money or who could convince their neighbors. What do we do with those people now? How do we mobilize those people who aren't going to give thousands of dollars to a lobbyist but really want to help us? How do we turn that into political gain? I mean, I assume that's the conversation that they're having. Tell me if it is, and tell me if you were in the White House what you would say to them.
Well, in some respects, Mike, it's a conversation they're having. But in other respects, I think you are tacitly trying to give the email recipients of the however many million people that Obama for America or Organizing of America has on file, you're trying to give them a break from the incessant communication that they had going up to November 6th. And, hey, I need $3, and we may lose this election. Well, we didn't lose this election. And frankly, I think the White House realizes it has the upper hand, and they're trying to get the best deal possible, and they understand the ability to employ a little brinksmanship that even if you were to go past December 31st, history shows that as pressure mounts, there will be a deal, even if it's a kick the can down the road deal, and I don't think that's what Barack Obama wants to do with his second term. But you might not need to motivate the forces, and certainly I'm subscribed to all the email lists, and I haven't got anything yet. I don't feel strongly motivated or that there is a third-party fundraising campaign to push this other than the CEOs and Fix the Debt. But what you're also seeing is if you stir the pot, Mike, enough every day with pictures of bipartisan governors walking up to the West Wing, which is almost a proxy for members of Congress because they represent both parties and they represent key states, and you have a picture that shows up in the New York Times, and you have Boehner, and that's shot by Doug Mills, and then you have Steve Crowley shooting a picture of Boehner walking down the hallway, and you look at that lead paragraph of the front page of the New York Times today. I don't have it at my fingers. Maybe you do. But basically what that does is that's a chess move, and that paints John Boehner and Mitch McConnell into a corner, and that if the New York Times says that, well, local reporters trying to write it for their districts in their newspapers are going to say, well, how does the paper of record write this? Let me see how I can translate that into my district, because that's where my Republican congressman is, and see if how that's going to work. So it all starts at the top of this political media food chain that's sort of codependent on each other, and it depends on how both of these bodies, the White House and Congress, are shaping this narrative and who wins in the next day's coverage or in that evening news coverage.
And the shots of the bipartisan governors and John Boehner, that's all tried and true business, right? There's nothing groundbreaking or new about that. It's just execution.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a... You strategize a lot about mm-hmm. this, Mike. You sit around the Roosevelt Room or you sit in the Speaker's office and you figure out where are lenses going to see me today and in what context. And I think what Republicans have learned is we don't win in any circumstance when we are flanking the president left, right in the cabinet room and the press pool is ushered in with cameras blazing, lights all over the place, and questions shouted at us. It's better almost for us to stay hived away in our offices, send Tim Geithner up to make a proposal, even if it's a laughable one, and give us the ability to react to that on the Sunday shows. I mean, this is another chess move you make. You have that Geithner meeting at the end of a week, and then you go on Chris Wallace or you dismiss the proposal out of hand. There's no visual record of this exchange happening, so it's he said, she said, or he said, he said.
Do you think, I know it's polyoptics and you're involved in everyone's visual perception of things, but do you think the visual, even in something as driven by minute details of, you know, what age we're going to have Medicare kick in and much more, and, you know, how we're going to index the payments, do you think the visual is really driving this?
Well, I think... Yesterday, if you take an example, and if I really, this is what happens to a dyslexic when they become of middle age. You start to really watch these cues that are put on. So Brian Williams starts nightly news last night. He is doing a narrative voiceover, and he is showing repeated visual of President Obama walking up to a stage flanked with American flags. It's going in slow motion, and it happens about three times because maybe the editors were a little sloppy. And he's talking about negotiations, and visually it shows the president going up a stairs behind American flags. It doesn't show Republicans cowered in their offices. It has a report by Kristen Welker.
So what you said, let me interrupt you. Yes. So he's ascendant, and he has America backing him. I mean, that's what that shows.
That's exactly what that shows. Slow motion, Mike, three times. I mean, if you're just making dinner and keeping your eye on the tube or the volume down, as Michael Deaver always used to say, your thought is this guy is who's in charge.
Yeah.
And he's not in charge in a negative way. He's moving up to a stage. And then you've got, you know, two pieces from Washington last night, one Kristen Welker that reflects the White House's strategy in pretty positive light. And then you've got Kelly O'Donnell reporting on how Republicans could, even with poor Bob Dole sitting in a wheelchair on the Senate floor, couldn't pass the disability treaty for the United Nations. So it's a double whammy, just in sort of the visual way in which the first 6 minutes of a national newscast are presented.
Right. But that's all hitting the people who are paying attention. And I think that when the president travels outside the bubble of Washington to a toy factory or Philadelphia suburb, he gets more attention than when he walks up those stairs.
Oh, yeah. I think a totally underappreciated element of the way travel works in either campaign or even more so in post-campaign. When you go to Allentown, PA, or Stroudsburg, or wherever that toy factory is, they rarely see a president. So a president shows up, and it's more of a cause for national celebration, like when, you know, Lincoln's train came through, or Washington led the Continental Army. I mean, this is a big deal, and you just can't help yourself but think, my God, I know the president really was looking for someplace within Marine One range, helicopter range of the Ellipse, but he came to our freaking town, and so we're going to play him up big on the front page. This is not going to make be happy news for the local Republican congressman representing that district.
Yeah, I think East Stroudsburg has that on the sign, into town, our freaking town. I want to ask you one more visual-related question. It just strikes me, and later in the show we'll be talking about one of these stories, that in this week and last week, the two biggest New York stories have been driven by the visual.
Oh, absolutely. That,
right? They are the man who was tragically killed by the subway train and all the discussion around that. And then, if you remember last week, the police officer who bought the homeless person shoes.
Lawrence DePrimo.
Right. Could you just, I mean, take it away. Give me your thoughts on this.
Well, it's a fascinating dichotomy of 2 weeks. You have a tourist named Jennifer Foster with a cell phone camera, and she's walking in New York in Times Square on December 14th, an officer from the 6th District, Greenwich Village, doing anti-terrorism duty. And she just snaps this picture on this smartphone of when he walked into the Skechers store and had emerged with a size 12 all-weather boot for this homeless person. And it looks like, remember that old Sports Illustrated cover of Sid Finch, the incredible 110-mile-an-hour fastball thrower? He had feet that big.
Right. It was fictitious, but yes.
It was such a gorgeous amateur shot. It's posted on the NYPD website, goes viral, and you know, millions of people around the world are touched by that moment, just by a tourist snapping a photo. An amateur photographer this week captures a picture of a man who has just been pushed onto the subway car trying to get up, and while he said that he was using his flash to alert the subway driver to stop, you know the way these subways come, it's hard. And it did not seem, and there's going to be so much more reporting about this, that people were actually there trying to pull his body up.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be getting to it soon.
But the homeless issue, there are millions of people affected by this. Murder, there are millions of people affected by this, but when a lens is on it, it moves people in dramatic ways. And, you know, people are killed every day. People are not helped every day. But perhaps just by the fact that this image was on it, there'll be much more attention paid. But again, you know, whether you go across the pond and you hear the story of how local radio disc jockeys called Kate Middleton's hospital purporting to be Queen Elizabeth and Prince Charles, and they got through, but it's only a story because there's audio.
Yeah.
So audio and visual, the combination of polyoptics, one instance of one person, even though it affects so many more millions of people, it's when the lens is on it and something is recorded other than just spoken about.
Josh King was the director of production of presidential events under President Clinton. He's the host of the podcast and SiriusXM show Polyoptics. He hosts that with Adam Belmar, who is kind of the Republican equivalent of what Josh did. And stay with me as I quell over the show for a second. I recommend it highly. I think Brian Lehrer Show listeners really like it. It's bipartisan. You have a tremendous guest list, and it's far from the same old thing that everyone talks about. A great take on a lot of the issues. The show's a really great listen, Josh. I enjoy it a lot.
Mike, thanks so much for your attention. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And in a moment, we'll be talking about Albany. You think the national political scene is crazy? They can't even count who's where up in Albany. Stay with us.